Well, good morning, Tucson, and welcome to this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, live on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, here heard Saturdays here at noon on KVOI, sitting in for Zach this morning. It's Monday. Some of you are working today, some aren't, for the Columbus Day holiday. Either case, thanks for tuning in to the Tipping Point. To kick off our Monday morning news hour, we're joined by Nicole Ludden from the Arizona Daily Star. Nicole has been covering local government news at the city and the county. But Nicole, as I understand it, you've got a new teammate coming on board, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We've had a wonderful journalist join the team named Sam K. Mack, and he's focusing on city issues and City Hall for us.
Well, it's nice to see some actual expansion in the newsroom down there for a change.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a needed change here.
So, Nicole, we've got a lot to cover here this morning, and just a friendly chat between two people with thousands of folks eavesdropping. Nicole, I'm, as we talked in the pre-interview, I'm not from your country. I confuse easily. So correct me here. At Pima County, are we requiring COVID vaccines? Are we not? Are we masking this week? Are we not? What the heck is going on?
Yeah, it's been a wide range of developments over the past few months. So right now, the guidance is following CDC guidance within the Pima County Health Department. It's recommended to wear masks if you're not vaccinated, and if you are vaccinated, then mask indoors. As far as vaccines, Pima County has not mandated vaccines for its employees, but the city of Tucson has.
And now, is this with the federal mandate from President, coming down from President Biden, does that affect municipalities?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. So that federal mandate stems from OSHA requirements. You know, employers with more than 100 employees have to mandate vaccines or, you know, subject their employees to weekly testing. And Arizona is interesting. It actually has a state OSHA plan, which basically means that OSHA requirements for municipalities, local governments, have to be at least as effective as federal OSHA requirements. So while the city is telling me they're still waiting for more guidance from the Biden administration on how to implement that, how to roll that out, it does look like the city of Tucson will be subject to that federal mandate.
So at that point, this is kind of a moot discussion then, I would assume, at that point, as far as the council and the Board of Supervisors. I mean, if that's, those are the rules, right, coming down from the feds, I would think.
Yeah, it kind of is, but on the same point, you know, the city of Tucson has been rolling this out months before the Biden administration announced those plans.
What do you see happening? I know at least one supervisor has made several efforts to do some independent mandates, I guess mask mandates too, and that just, it hasn't gotten the traction down there, huh?
Yeah. You know, the main obstacle in the way of Pima County imposing a vaccine mandate for its workers was that group of state laws that was set to take effect September 29th. And those laws, which ban things such as vaccine mandates, mask mandates for schools, were grouped into budget reconciliation bills at the end of the legislative session this summer. And then a Maricopa County Superior Court judge struck down those laws. So that changed things for both the city and county. You know, the county was saying those laws were the reason it wouldn't put things into effect, like a vaccine mandate or mask mandates for schools. But this past week, you know, Supervisor Matt Hines reintroduced those motions. And while the county, again, you know, decided not to impose a mask mandate for the schools within the county, they kind of set in motion for County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry to create a draft plan of what a vaccine mandate would look like. But it's unclear how that would be enforced, because the majority of supervisors on the board have expressed they wouldn't support any sort of termination or suspension for those employees who choose not to get vaccinated.
And now,
so
Nicole,
we're still kind of up in the air there.
I tell you, Nicole, back in my early days as a lobbyist, there was a fellow here, John Kromko. I don't know if he's still around. I think he is. But he was in the state legislature, and he was kind of a curmudgeon. And one thing I learned from John was he would use the most extreme, almost ludicrous example, permutation of something to get people's attention when it came to a particular legislation or a particular bill. So I'd like to explore that with you a little bit. We just had Let's see, Southwest Airlines this weekend canceled 1,826 flights, and another 1,784 flights were delayed. You know, it's not clear at this point it's COVID-related. The Pilots Association saying, no, we're not, you know, it's not a walkout. But irregardless, here's my most extreme example. The Title VII of the Civil Rights Act 1964 protects workers from discrimination based on religion. Employers must provide reasonable accommodations for workers, blah, 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 blah. And historically, the courts have upheld unpaid leave as a reasonable accommodation. But at the end of the day, if folks aren't in the seat doing the job, they're not doing the job. I mean, what if we can't flush our toilets anymore because the county runs a sewer or Amazon stops delivering packages? I mean, is in your interaction with these leaders, are you seeing any discussion of the potential second order effects of this, of these mandates?
Yeah, I think that's the main hesitation a lot of these government figures have. In the city of Tucson, it was a 6-1 vote with council member Nikki Lee voting no because of that exact fear that the city would lose access to core services. However, you know, it's still very early in the process, but we're not seeing a mass exodus of employees yet. But since things did get held up in court, you know, the administration of these policies, it's kind of difficult to tell at this point if people really will leave the city or the county over these policies. And of course, in the county, you know, nothing like a mandate or suspension because one won't get vaccinated. It has been implemented at this point. But I definitely am seeing that that's definitely in the back of the people who are making these decisions' minds.
Well, and again, I'm just a poor immigrant, and I'm not taking position. I got the shot. I'm not taking a position one way or the other on that, but I'm just concerned about what we may be seeing. And, you know, other than full employment for lawyers and people, you know, making vaccines, I'm very worried. I'm very concerned. And I don't know, you know, with the county, the law enforcement, the sheriff's an independently elected official. I don't know if that means he can make his own decisions or not, or if he'll be beholden to the recommendations of the board. Just generally, what's the vibe you're getting down there? Just everybody's kind of hustling, but concerned?
Right. And I think, you know, the sheriff's department is an excellent anecdote to explain the larger issue going on here. You know, the sheriff, Chris Manos, is telling me he's seeing cases rise among his corrections officers in the Pima County Jail. But, you know, the inmates that they reside over are quarantined for 14 days, go through extensive COVID mitigation practices. And he's also seeing very low vaccination rates among those corrections officers. So he's kind of surmising those officers are the ones bringing it into the jail. Well, so given that he's passed with public safety, you know, he's kind of balancing, if I mandate vaccines, I don't want all these officers who, you know, he's already short-staffed to leave. But if he doesn't, he's afraid COVID will continue to spread.
You know, and Nicole, hold that thought, because I'd like to pursue that a little bit more after the break here.
Sure.
One of those kind of breaking stories that you're working on for the readers down there at the Arizona Daily Star. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your guest host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, sitting in for Zach Yenser here on Tipping Point. Stick around. We'll be right back with more with Nicole Ludden from the Arizona Daily Star.
The people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The playoff race is heating up for FC Tucson. On Wednesday, October 13th, FC Tucson celebrates those who have helped the community heal with Fuerza Frontline Workers Night. The team for all of Tucson is back at home on Saturday, October 16th. Before closing out the regular season Saturday, October 30th, we'll get ready for Halloween and Dia de los Muertos and the playoffs with Fan Appreciation Night. Get your tickets now at fctucson.com/tickets or call 520-600-3095.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
I'm sorry, folks. A little inside joke. I'm here dancing to the lead music. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Zach Yenser today here on The Tipping Point. We're talking with Nicole Ludden. Nicole is now the reporter at the Arizona Daily Star covering. Nicole, exclusively, will your beat be then the County Board of Supervisors?
You know, it's pretty fluid since the two entities, the city council and board, interact on a lot of things. But for the majority, I will be covering the county issues.
Okay, so the nice thing about Tipping Point is folks not only get to hear the news of the day, but we also get an insight in what news is coming up. Let's talk a little more about this issue down at the Pima County Jail that you're working on. And, you know, it's interesting. I think thankfully, a lot of us don't think about the jail very much. We don't have to. But when you take a second to think about COVID in the context there, we've got a very enclosed space with lots of people, the workers coming in and out. Boy, that's kind of a petri dish waiting to happen down there, huh?
Absolutely. Chris Nanos himself used that same terminology, said a petri dish for COVID.
So what are you, you're working on a story now or maybe a series, Nicole. What are you seeing down there, and what can you give us a little peek on what the readers might be seeing regarding this situation?
Right. So, you know, unfortunately, the last week of September, an inmate actually died at the Pima County Jail. Now, we don't have the medical examiner's report yet, but he did test positive for COVID-19. You know, we're not sure if that's the cause of death yet. But, you know, Sheriff Chris Nanos is saying of all the precautions that the jail takes to protect those inmates, it's very unlikely that he contracted it from another inmate. And with the low vaccination rate that Nanos is seeing among corrections officers and employees in the jail, he's kind of surmising, if you will, that a corrections officer passed on COVID to this inmate. And again, you know, it's not really fair to draw a direct line there because we're not sure if that was his cause of death. But he was hospitalized for COVID, and so things are definitely escalating there when it comes to COVID. You know, the jail has been acclaimed for handling COVID pretty well, you know, up until now, but it looks like things are starting to, COVID cases are starting to experience an uptick, whereas in the rest of the world, things are somewhat settling.
Nicole, do you know how many inmates are incarcerated down there currently? Do you have a range there? Any idea?
You know, I don't have an exact number. I have some public records to quest out, waiting for some specific data there, but, you know, it'll definitely be interesting to find out the percentage of the population that has contracted COVID out of how many inmates are there right now.
Well, so I'm not a doctor. I'd never even played one on TV. But we can mandate the employees get the shots, but we can't go in there and forcibly vaccinate the inmates. And so if you've got, let's say, I'll pick a number, for 300, 500 inmates down there, and they can't be vaccinated, what's the point of all this?
Well, every inmate is offered a vaccination at the Pima County Jail, but as you said, you know, they're not mandated to take it. They don't have to. However, what I'm hearing is that the inmates at the jail go through way more extensive quarantine protocols. They all have to wear masks at all time. You know, upon entering the jail, they do have to quarantine without leaving their cell for 14 days, have to test negative before they can leave, whereas the employees residing over them aren't subject to those sort of things.
Wait a minute. They have to test negative before they leave? So if my sentence is up?
Before they leave quarantine.
Oh, okay.
not before they leave the jail. Sorry, should have specified that. Yes, after they leave the 14 days, before they can leave their 14 days of quarantine, they have to test negative.
Well, I tell you, we look forward to seeing what you come up with there in the Daily Star when you are finished with your stories on that, Nicole. You're also pursuing another story at the county that I find particularly interesting, and it has to do with constables.
Yeah.
Now, explain to, well, okay, so out here, I did my research. I did prepare, Nicole. So Arizona Revised Statutes 22.131, constables shall serve and return all processes, warrants, and notices directed or delivered to them by a justice of the peace, the county, or by a competent authority. In effect, that is their job. But it also states further down, Nicole, a constable who is duly elected or is appointed by the Board of Supervisors has the authority of a peace officer only in the performance of a constable's official duties. Has there been anybody curling outside the lines on that? Any constables out there getting crossways there?
Well, you know, I think one of the key issues here is that since they are duly elected officials, the constables don't necessarily have a cohesive, universal set of standards they have to abide by, right? Like, one constable may approach the serving paper process differently than another. We're hearing, you know, that some constables kind of take on the role of a quasi-law enforcement officer. You know, they have a paper and they serve it kind of black and white there, whereas others take on the role of a social worker. You know, they'll offer any resources they can to help that person get out of eviction if that's what they're serving. We have had some issues come up with constables in the past. You know, for example, George Camacho was fired for, you know, he was accused of sexual harassment and bullying, lost his right to carry a gun. We have Oscar Vasquez, who was suspended by the board after a range of instances, the last one being he refused to serve an eviction notice.
So explain this to me, Nicole. Again, so like Sheriff Nanos is independently elected, so he doesn't answer to the Board of Supervisors. But right. Constables are also independently elected, but they can be removed by the... Is that in the statute that the Board of Supervisors can remove them for malfeasance or other issues? Do you know?
You know, I don't... They can... After it goes... So when a complaint comes up against a constable, it goes to a state review board who can then make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, who can then ultimately, you know, make sure that that constable is suspended for however many months without pay. But ultimately, as you said, since they're elected, it's not really up to the Board of Supervisors to recall that person. You know, that would be more the election thing. But they can recommend or, you know, try to strongly recommend that constable resign on their own accord. It's an interesting kind of back and forth between their capacity as an independently elected official and the power that administration has, which is kind of limited here.
I tell you, Nicole, it's clear as mud to me.
Yes, it's confusing.
Given what's going on, are they, in the story you're working on, I don't know how much you can tell us now, but are there any initiatives or moves to try and clean up this process or clarify it? Is that, I understand it, you're peeking into something like that?
Yeah, you know, County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry is ultimately recommending the Board of Supervisors move towards replacing those county constables with county employees who would serve out the same task and get paid less, you know, save some money to the county. And he's told me this has been a concern for a while, given some incidences that have occurred among county constables in the last couple of years, as well as kind of a lack of cohesiveness among how each constable approaches their job.
Where is that in the process, Nicole? Is it just, is that agendized yet, or?
It's not agendized yet because since these are independently elected officials, the board really only has power to adjust their salaries and make moves like that once it's time for their reelection. And so right now, most of these constables are not for reelection or for, you know, a constable to run for election in that precinct until 2024. So this is in the very nascent stages of development.
Well, I mean, this is something that makes political geeks like me just lick our chops because, I mean, it's in the state statutes. And I guess that was my first thought when you mentioned this subject is, you know, does the Board of Supervisors really have the authority to eliminate the position? So if I understand you correctly, Nicole, technically, in the statutes, there would still be the role of constable and I guess maybe an election, but nobody's going to want to do it because there's no pay. I mean, nobody's going to want to run for that office. How does that work?
You know, right now, the constables usually, so the Arizona statutes that guard constable salary are there to basically compensate the constable based on their workload. And right now, most of the county's constables make the maximum salary you can make, which is $67,000 a year. And that's one thing Huckleberry is trying to change. You know, let's compensate them at the lowest, which is about, I think it's about $48,000 a year, until they can kind of, you know, operate collectively and try to work together more. They all have very different workloads depending on the precinct they reside in. Obviously, some precincts are way more populous, have more voters than others. So, you know, it's unclear if they were to be replaced with county employees, how much those county employees would be paid. But I'm assuming that would be less than the $67,000, since that's kind of top of the range here that's being implemented right now. It's unclear why that is.
Well, Nicole, far from be it from me to tell you how to do your job, but one question that might be good to ask, one thing I love about the sheriff's office is because they're independently elected, they are free from undue pressure or influence of other elected officials. And just one thought that jumps to mind for me right away, if these are all county employees, then that sort of eliminates that potential sort of protection from undue influence, potentially, from someone doing their job. So that, it's curious. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what you come up with.
Yep, absolutely. Be looking for that for me at the Star, and I will be looking into those legal issues, as you mentioned.
Anything else that you're working on you can share with us this morning? Or is it still top
secret?
How does that work, by the way? Do you see something on the agenda and then say, this looks like there could be, you know, some legs on this story and I'll pursue it? Or are you given assignments by the editor, or a little bit of both?
You know, it's my responsibility to keep tabs on everything local government, that being the city too, even though we have more of a focused reporter in the city now. And I keep track of the stories that I think readers would care about the most, that affect them the most, and I follow them. And like you said, if I see an agenda item, I try to get on that as soon as possible and continue my coverage on that.
Well, I tell you what, send me the email for the new city reporter, because, boy, have I got a load of stuff that I want him to look into.
I will be sure to do that. I'm sure you'd be happy to talk about it.
We'll take the Star back to a 250-page newspaper. Nicole, thank you so much for your time today, and thanks for sharing that information with our listeners, and look forward to having you back here on The Tipping Point sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not all COVID or politics. Something coming up you might have heard about. Back in the olden days, you know, Tucson used to do a lot of filming. That was an important part of our economy, and that's faded a little bit over the years. But you might have heard the HBO Max is doing a new TV pilot. If you would like to be in that movie, you want to be a movie star, they're having local area Tucson casting. Non-union extras get $120 for an 8-hour day. They provide a catered lunch. Obviously, you must show that you're eligible to work legally in the United States. Have a valid driver's license. If you would like to get involved, submit your full name, cell, email, two current selfies, one shoulders up, one full length, to TucsonPilotExtras@gmail.com. You might become a movie star. How cool would that be? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Buehler-Garcia, guest hosting for Zach Yenser here on The Tipping Point. Stick around. When we come back, we'll be talking housing with David Goleski, the CEO and president of Saba.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
The playoff race is heating up for FC Tucson. On Wednesday, October 13th, FC Tucson celebrates those who have helped the community heal with Fuerza Frontline Workers Night. The team for all of Tucson is back at home on Saturday, October 16th. Before closing out the regular season Saturday, October 30th, we'll get ready for Halloween and Dia de los Muertos and the playoffs with Fan Appreciation Night. Get your tickets now at fctucson.com/tickets or call 520-600-3095.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to The Tipping Point, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays here at noon on KVOI, sitting in for Zach this morning. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger, opening downtown on October 20th. Little Love Burger will serve up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream, milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. Follow their beat on social at littleloveburger.com. I am so there, Matt. Yeah?
Sounds good.
Let's go. Well, we're done with the show after October 20th. Ladies and gentlemen, I sat in on a meeting of an Affordable Housing Commission where they were discussing affordable housing data, and it was scary. Something like a 31% rise in rental rates and housing prices. The city staff estimated 75,000 families within the city limits were at risk of not being able to afford their rents. And so today we're going to talk about housing affordability with an expert in the industry. David Golieski is the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association. David, welcome to The Tipping Point.
Hey, Ben. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
David, it's for those of us outside, it's easy to look at those numbers and say, well, dang it, just build more houses. But it's not quite that easy, is it? What are you seeing? And it strikes me as odd, David, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but the housing market is still red hot out there. But that's just the resale market, correct? How is it going with building homes in Southern Arizona?
Well, Ben, I mean, I think first and foremost, we have a strong market both on the resale side as well as the new home building side. So far this year, single family permits are up about 27%. You know, we have all the signs pointing to another strong year in home building. 2018 and 2019 were strong. And as you mentioned, in 2020, we had a blip a couple of the months in the early part of the year. But since the pandemic, things have been going great in home construction and in housing. Yes, there certainly are some challenges. I mean, you mentioned affordability. That's a key issue that's being driven in many ways by some of the labor challenges we have, supply chain challenges, material pricing increasing. But it does look like 2021 shaping up to be another strong year, and we certainly want to keep building those houses to provide the supply we need to meet our community's demand.
David, the Tipping Point and listeners are a pretty smart bunch, but let's, explain to us, because a lot of us who aren't in this industry, we don't think about, the material part of it makes sense. Okay, we can't get lumber, hard to build a home without lumber, or what there's, a concrete plant, had to lay off their employees, so we can't get the concrete. But what are the other factors that folks don't think of that go into the price of building a home?
Well, you're right. I mean, the things like lumber have dominated the headlines. The supply chain challenges just continue to persist. Little sign of slowing down. But obviously, anytime that you've got a good market, those on the land side, the landowners, land sellers, they're certainly wanting to take advantage of a hot market. And so their pricing is going up, which means the builder has to pay more, and that gets factored into those housing costs. There's obviously the cost of compliance with regulation, whether that's your local building codes or state driven policy issues. And obviously the feds are doing their part in making sure that they, pass on, different policy objectives that impact the price of housing as well.
Well, one thing, David, that is frustrating me in my many years in Tucson, I'm much older than you, I suspect, but Tucson is... I like to kind of sort of joke, but not really, that we're Tucson should be the poster child for unintended consequences. And one of my frustrations is, on one side, we want, you know, I read the data for you. We need more affordable housing in Tucson. But I don't necessarily sometimes feel like one hand down there is talking to the other. We want more affordable housing, but on the regulatory side, we're not seeing a very aggressive push to do whatever they need to do on that regulatory side as far as the government rules cost side of things. Am I right, or I just don't know what I'm talking about as usual?
No, I think you're on the right track there. I mean, affordability is such a tricky issue. I mean, where do you start? How do you define affordability? Who are you focusing on to make sure that they get into housing? On one hand, Tucson remains a very affordable market, especially when looking at other competing cities. There's a lot of in-migration from the Pacific Northwest and places like that, where they see how much their dollar can go further. We've heard about people from California who are cashing in, selling their home, and they want to come to Tucson because it's much more affordable. But yet there are real affordability issues, especially when it comes to regulation. This is, you know, certainly anecdotal, but I was talking to a builder just last week who, when they were factoring in the costs associated with complying with environmental regulations, open space requirements, it was going to add around $10,000 to $11,000 per home just to keep up with those regulations. And so you're absolutely right. On one hand, we want to protect open space, and it's implying that there's anything wrong with that, but certainly have to keep in mind that there's a correlation when it comes to the cost of housing and affordability.
And that's $10,000 whether I'm building a home to sell for $100,000 or sell for $100 million, right? I mean, that cost remains the same.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's certainly some flexibility based on the size of the project, the number of units. And to that end, I mean, obviously, if we're able to achieve higher density in the communities we're building, you can spread those costs over a greater number of units. But we've also had a reluctance to building dense communities in mm-hmm. southern Arizona.
Right. So I was at a restaurant, just yesterday, and there was a 30-minute wait to get in. And I'm peeking inside, and there's lots of tables. And so I asked the host, I said, why do we have to wait 30 minutes? You got plenty of tables. And she kind of looked at me like, again, Ben doesn't know what he's talking about. She says, we don't have the staff. We don't have the servers to accommodate all the tables. We can't get labor. What is that also a kind of a bugaboo in your industry right now, David?
Well, Ben, you always know what you're talking about. So I think you're spot on. I mean, I think that's a great analogy where, and to translate it over to home building, you're seeing a strong sales pace. So, you know, there's a lot of demand out there, but builders have had to get creative because these material and labor challenges extend cycle times. That means it takes longer to close homes. So as a result, they're having to pace sales. They're having to, you know, just really get creative because it doesn't do them any good to agree to build and sell a home to a buyer if they don't know that they're going to have the labor to actually build that home in the time that they've promised. So labor has been an issue for several years, but it's particularly acute right now. It seems to be, you know, kind of back and forth, whether it's material availability is the biggest problem or having enough labor to actually, put those materials into the new home. So that's why organizations like SAB are active in trying to work with the local workforce training programs to make sure that we're telling young people that a career in the construction trades is a viable one. They can make a lot of money, and we certainly need them.
Well, let's talk a little more about that. Do you think, because sometimes I feel, you know, being a economic development, community development guy, I think that folks, and it's very complex. There's lots of moving parts. But do you feel as a community in whole, or what you see in Southern Arizona, do we put enough value in that the economic impacts and the career potential of in the home building industry?
You know, Ben, I think that's a good question. And certainly, you know, I think that I still believe that housing is the leading economic indicator. And when housing's going strong, our local economy's going strong. And sometimes we perceive those, you know, those new homes that are going up to have a negative impact. And I would say, you know, obviously we want to build in the right way. We want to build smart. We want to be sensitive to our social and environmental values. But you can't turn a blind eye to the jobs that are being created, the quality jobs, the dollars that are being turned over in our economy. And that's why I think it's really important that while issues like labor for construction, and not just home building, but commercial construction as well, may seem to be you know, the builder's problem, but the reality is it's important for our entire community to make sure that we've got the labor to build the homes, that we're not putting up roadblocks to build those next communities, because ultimately we need that economic turn in here locally to keep growing, to keep prospering, and especially to keep up and make sure that we're competing with you know, with Phoenix, and certainly being able to stand out in the Southwest as a place companies want to go and expand and people want to be.
Well, David, I tell you what, every time I have to pay a plumber or an electrician to come work on my 100-year-old house, I think, man, I should have gone into the trades. The skilled trades is the way to go. Real quick, David, home show coming up. Tell folks what they can see and when and where.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ben. So our home show is coming up on October 29th through the 31st at the Tucson Convention Center. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Halloween weekend. Listeners can go to sabahomeshow.com for discount coupons and to see everything that they'll have to experience there. It's such an excellent opportunity if you're looking to improve your home for the latest and greatest in products and services. We encourage the listeners to go check that out.
David, I can't resist. Halloween weekend, they'll see some scary deals.
That's a good
okay,
one.
I'll keep my day job. David Garleski, thank you so much, President and CEO of the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Zach Genser today on the Tipping Point. When we come back, we'll be talking with the mayor of Sahuarita, Tom Murphy. Stick around.
Valley to Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Helping you make better money decisions is what the Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
Tipping Point, ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Zach Genser. You know, I love Tucson, even though it frustrates me sometimes. But just like having kids, there's enough love to go around. You can love all your children. And another town that I just absolutely adore is the town of Sahuarita. And we're very pleased to have Mayor Tom Murphy joining us today. Mayor Murphy, thanks for sharing some time with our Tipping Point listeners today.
It's always good to be on the program, man. It's a special treat to be with you, Ben.
Oh, thanks, get out of here. All the guests have been so nice today. What it is. Actually, Tom, I'm old enough to remember the days when Mayor Murphy was another guy in Tucson.
Yes. Well, I don't know. You don't think you want to throw that age out. Over the years, I had gone to a couple of ULI, Urban Land Institute events, and there was a Tom Murphy, mayor of Pittsburgh. So we were mentioned, and I'm certainly not to that level, but yeah, there's a couple Tom Murphys out there. I don't know if that's good or bad.
And Tom, I mean that sincerely. Every time I go down to the Sahuarita on business, I love the community. I mean, the roads are smooth. You got just an outstanding school system down there, lots of recreation amenities. And I had the honor of being at your State of the Town luncheon just a bit ago, and lots of stuff popping in Sahuarita. What should people who weren't able to attend the luncheon know about what's going on down there?
Yeah, no, thank you. No, we have a lot of positive things all the way from, you know, and following David is really a good segue, because we really were known strictly as a good residential community for many, many years. And then when the Great Recession hit, we had to diversify or look at diversifying our economy. So our retail collections and openings of restaurants and stores were up about $1 million+ over last year. We wanted to bring in more workforce opportunities, and the hospital, Northwest Hospital, just opened. We just got our first tenant over on our SAMTEC, Sahuarita Advanced Manufacturing Technology Center, Saguaro Solar, took about a long-term lease on 8,000 square feet. So we really feel like in so many ways we're firing on all cylinders. We're probably looking at between 550 and 600 new single-family home permits for this past year, which we have to go back about 10 years before, you know, we can reach that point. And when I was listening to David and you were talking, you know, but the affordability is going to be, you know, pushing up against an envelope at that point as well. We sort of went really high back in the early days, and then everything sort of crashed, and now we're back up to the top again. But overall, we're really, you know, really doing well down here. And as you said, you've got some smooth roads. We're putting an extra $500,000 on top of our HERF money to keep our roads and help keep a good quality of life for our residents.
Well, you know, one thing also for our listeners who are actually in Tucson proper, Tom, I mean, generally the affordability in Sahuarita, the affordable housing options are going to be greater, I think, than a lot of areas within the metro Tucson community. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But the other thing, too, is, I mean, shoot, you get on the freeway, it's not, but, you know, I live in central Tucson by the U of A, and it doesn't take me but, you know, maybe 25 minutes to get to Sahuarita. So it's a perfect bedroom community kind of for commutes for folks who still have jobs up in the metro area.
Right. Well, and that's what we found when I was retired Air Force when we moved here, but my wife was still active duty back in 2003 at Davis-Monthan, and it was still, you know, a pretty easy commute coming down. We have a lot of Raytheon employees that live here, a lot of Border Patrol agents because they can work at the Tucson sector or down in the Nogales area and still have a good drive on I-19. So I think we're perfectly located. As you may know, Ben, Sahuarita Road is still the only connector between I-19 and I-10. Mm-hmm. And we're working on the Sonoran Corridor to, you know, expand that at some point. But, you know, we're really in that southwest corner to be able to capture a lot of the visitors when they, you know, could cross the border and come up here. So really trying to create a good quality of life. And as you know, I was on the school board for many years and very proud of the school district and the growth and opportunities, whether it's been from the JTED opportunities. I know you were talking about that as well with the trades. Always been very proud of what they've been able to offer. And then over the last few years, we've really partnered with Pima Community College, U of A, ASU, all of the universities. But with Pima, a student graduating, if you're a freshman in one of our high schools, by the time you graduate, you really would have the opportunity to have an associate's degree through Pima Community College. That's how far we've come over the last few years.
I tell you, Tom, one thing that's impressed me, and particularly with the school district there, I was down, the Rosemont Copper Company was one of my clients when they were first getting started, and I was very impressed with the forward thinking of both the city officials and the education officials there when it came to JTED. In fact, it was in a meeting in Sahuarita talking about JTED that inspired me and really brought to my attention the Tucson's real potential for being the Silicon Valley of mining technology and training. I'm not quite sure how far along we are on that, but it's impressive.
No, it really is. And, you know, we were founded. One of our early parks, Animex Park, was named after a mine Freeport a few generations back. All of them have been very good to our community, Freeport, with their foundation. They really helped us in the economic development sphere to identify how many home-based businesses and starting our shark tank, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
repurposed our entry to our town hall with money through that foundation. So very supportive of the copper industry. Copper is where it is.
Yeah.
And the new technologies that come out, especially with what Rosemont is working on, to me is very exciting. We just try to support all of our businesses, you know, from small to large. And I think we'll all be much better because of that if we do that.
Yeah,
obviously, you have to go through your processes and things, but it shouldn't take longer than, you know, wars that are fought, you know, to get through a process to try to get a new mine. But that's my personal opinion.
That's a whole nother show. But I agree with you. That was part of my frustration is this, and you're exactly right. People say, well, why can't you put the mine somewhere else? And it just makes you scratch your head and chuckle a little bit, then move on to the next person. You're right that you have to dig the ore where it is. And I'd rather do it here where we can control the process and make sure it's done right and safely and the best for the environment than having it done by China and somewhere else. But your new tenant there, great news. How many jobs will that be? What's that projected to be, Tom?
Yeah, I think they're going to be starting off in about 15 and then growing from there. And not only are they a great company, they're a great community partner. They support veterans' efforts to keep them healthy and, you know, mentally stable. And a lot of our, you know, veteran community has struggled with suicide and other things over the years,
mm-hmm.
as well as various other organizations. So really proud of their expansion, you know, in our area. They started in Tucson and then will be expanding down here. And, you know, we've had a really great partnership with U of A Innovation Center for Innovation. You know, they've been helping us under the tech park. So I just really have a belief that you have to believe in the abundance mentality and not the scarcity mentality, and really just try to work with everybody to try to bring continue to have a good quality of life. And that goes from, I've been very proud over the years, we're always named as one of the safest communities in the state of Arizona, investing in our infrastructure, our parks. So just kind of all of the above, providing a good quality of life, I think, is what's helped us to stay in good stead as we continue to move forward. I think we grew about 35% over the last census.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, we were formed in 1994, and from 2000 to 2010, we grew 790%. So that was a little challenging.
Well, you know, Tom, that's from my observation as a community and economic developer, I think that's one of the real challenges your community faces, and it's a good problem to have, but the amount of growth that you're having down there and growing pains, I should say, again, it's a good problem to have, but you're always on the move down there. And I mean, luckily the voters of Sahuarita are paying you a huge salary to deal with this, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking for my Taj Mahal, my next home right now. No, this sort of is the foundation of, you know, public service, but that's sort of how I grew up with my 21 years in the Air Force. You know, you do what's right, and do it with integrity, and end up being a winner at the end of the day.
Tom, we've only got a couple minutes left, but two things I want to touch on real quick. There was a little bit of a hurt of Farmers Investment Company shut down their retail operation. How many jobs are going away from that?
Yeah, not only the retail store, but also their processing plant. So that's going to be about 130 jobs.
Ouch.
They're going to still be growing the pecans here, but then shipping them, I think, a hot combination of Texas or Mexico for processing. So that's been a hit. I guess the only, you know, silver lining to that is, as we all talk about, the amount of job openings that are out there. Hopefully a lot of those folks, you know, will be able to fill a lot of those openings and opportunities. Last time when Freeport was talking about having to wind down a little bit, we partnered with Pima County One Stop and had them down in our town council chambers. And so we're going to, you know, we have constant outreach to them to try to help in any way that we can with the displaced workers. But they did give some advance notice. It won't be to the end of this year. And then I think they put a severance package together, depending on how long they were with the
Tom, we've just maybe 30 seconds real quick. We just recently had a horrible tragedy here in Tucson with the killing of the DEA agent. That his family is still there, right? Oh, I think we lost Tom. Something happened there. So, well, irregardless, what a great chat. Mayor Tom Murphy, thanks for joining us here on The Tipping Point, KVOI, your source for trusted local news and talk. And The Point means he's back. Okay.
Well, yes. Hey, Ben, sorry.
No worries. So real quick, 20 seconds before we have to go to the news, the tragedy with the DEA agent here in Tucson, his family is in Sawarita, and
yes,
just encourage all the citizens to reach out and support them, right?
Absolutely. It was a sad day for Sawarita. Lost us a DEA agent, Mike Garbo. And actually the same day, I had two funerals, one of our longtime employees, Adrian. Adrian Blanco passed away from cancer a couple of weeks ago. So usually we have sunny days down in Sawarita. Friday was a gut check, but DEA Garbo, obviously a law enforcement hero, certainly in Army before that. So
our prayers and all go out to his family. Tom, thanks for spending time with us this morning on Tipping Point.
Thank you, Dad. I really appreciate it.
Hey, folks, a pleasure to sit in for Zach today. But, hey, reminder, if you want to be a film star, send your email to TucsonPilotExtras@gmail.com. Zach, thank you. Take care, ladies and gentlemen.